All right, it's time for Unbedtime Stories, and my guest today, Karen Faith, is reading a story called, we'll say hello to her, you know, the usual stuff. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
And you sound lovely.
Oh, thank you. I've been fighting off a cold for the past couple weeks, so I'm hoping my voice hangs in there for me.
Oh, it will. It will, it will. So your story is called Life Happens in 9 Innings.
That's right.
Is that true?
It's true. Actually, I think I'm a huge baseball fan, by the way, just almost rabid. It's almost embarrassing. But, you know, I noticed as you go through the course of a baseball game, you've got 9 innings. And if you really look at it and look what happens, it's like telling a story from first inning to last. There's drama, there's excitement, there's the climax, there's the denouement, there's the final ending. And all of it is sort of told like a story. And I think that's sort of why I was drawn to that. And then, of course, there's also the Write What You Know. So I love baseball. And I was actually watching a baseball game and thinking, it was in October, worrying about what I was going to write my Nano about. And I thought, well, hey, why don't I write a baseball story? It's what I know. It was, you know, top of mind. So
how many years have you done NaNoWriMo?
This is actually my first year. I am a first-year Nano. Yeah, the folks that you've had on so far, Ian and Diane and Matt, are all veterans, and they were all people that I really looked up to. Those are people who've done this for several years, and they gave me a lot of encouragement along the way. So this is my very first year. So I definitely had to pick a topic that would lend itself to this process, because although I had written a couple other completed novels, the first one took me 4 years to complete. The second one took me 2 years to complete. And so the thought of writing 50,000 words in 30 days was mind-boggling. It was absolutely mind-boggling. And actually, I'm proud to say that I finished this just a couple of days ago. So I went from 4 years to 2 years to 2 months to get a completed novel done. So I'm really, really proud about this. I'm really happy. I wasn't even sure I was going to get all the way to the end. And I did a lot of, you know, the mental work before, you know, it's okay if you don't make it. It's fine. It's, you know, good that you tried and all of that. And so I was so happy. And my little obsessive compulsive personality came out along the way. And in the first week, I made myself crazy. I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and writing before I went to work, and writing on my lunch hour, and trying to stockpile a bunch of words, because when I had written in the past, when I got to about the middle of the book, that's where things sort of petered out for me. And that's why it took so long, because I was waiting for the next idea. So I thought I'd better stockpile words while I still had all the excitement of it. And it actually paid off. I finished the 50,000 words. I crossed the line on November 21st. So it actually took me 3 weeks.
Wow.
To get 50,000 words. Yeah. Yeah. Was very excited. I think it was the excitement of the first year. I heard Diane say on your show a couple weeks ago that her first year was really easy for her. And then the next year, the subsequent years, were a little bit tougher. So I'm interested to see how next year will go, because this year went surprisingly easy for me. I was actually really surprised, but pleased.
And you're hoping to get this published?
I am hoping. It needs a lot of editing. When you write in this speedy process, you're really just throwing a lot of words on the page, and you get some good stuff out of it. And I noticed when I was editing the piece that I'm going to read for you later today, there was work that it needed. It took some work, but I do hope to go through this process. I'm off work for a little while because of the holidays. So I've been working on editing it, and hopefully in January I can start submitting to literary agents to see if I can find an agent.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So if there are literary agents listening out there, give us a call.
Absolutely. Or if you know someone, in the publishing industry.
There you go. Well, how fun. Can you tell us a little bit about the two novels you wrote before?
So the first novel I wrote, it was right after I had moved here to California about 7 years ago. I moved from New Mexico, and I found that while I loved living here, I was also homesick. It was a big adjustment for me because I was by myself. Moved out here all alone, got my job transferred out here. And the first book that I wrote was really, it was inspired by a dream to begin with, but it was a lot of the memories of home and stories. It ended up being a lot of stories that happened when I was in college. I had a great time when I was in college. I went to New Mexico State University, which, who's heard of that? But it was a great time. It was an agricultural college, you know, hanging out with my best friend there. And so I ended up writing a lot of the stories, the fun things that we did when we were together in college. And when my best friend read it, she goes, wow, this is like a diary of our college experience. And so for me, it was a way to relive that, but also maybe close the door on that too, because I was moving on to the next era in my life. And then the next book, it was sort of strange. The inspiration came, it was one of those flash came out of nowhere. And it's about twins, a male and a female twin, and the different courses that their life take, the expectations that you had on them in the beginning as children, and then how differently their lives turned. And, you know, they're being twins, you think they would be more alike, but they weren't. So, and it was interesting because I started writing that, and then about 6 or so months later, my sister became pregnant with twins, which we all thought was very weird that I was writing a story about twins. And then she had twins. She has actually identical twins, identical boys. But it was a really strange sort of a woo-woo experience for me.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So I'm also working on editing that one, and hopefully I can get that out to some agents to see if I can get some representation on it.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So without further ado, let's hear your story.
All right.
So life happens in 9 innings.
It does. It does. Okay. So just to sort of kick us off, I'm going to start with a quote. You know, baseball, there's a lot of great quotes in baseball. It's been around for so long. There's a lot of good characters in the game. But I found this quote, and I thought it just really sort of set the stage for the beginning of the novel. And what I'm going to read for you is really the prologue to the novel. This is sort of leading in to the rest of the story. And let me just tell you real quick what the story is. It actually happens during the course of a baseball game. And so you get to meet a lot of the different people who are sitting in the stands while the game is going on. And what I do is, you won't hear it in this piece, but actually during the course of the novel, they're breaking in and you hear the announcer calling the game. And so really the game is the push that gets you through the story, and you go inning to inning and you meet these different characters and you get a little glimpse into their lives. And then you also over the top hear this announcer calling the game. And it's actually a game that I, in my spare room, had to map out. It's not a real game. It's a real game in my mind. And it was great because in November I got to continue baseball, which ended in October, but mapped out every inning and what happened and every hit and every out. And so there's sort of the story within the story. The game is the story that's happening while these people are around it. So, but as I said, this is the prologue. This will get us kicked off. And so this quote is from Ernie Hallwell, who is a Hall of Fame announcer. He was with the Detroit Tigers. And he says, "Baseball is a ballet without music, drama without words, a carnival without Cupid dolls. Baseball is continuity, pitch to pitch, inning to inning, season to season." "Bernie, would you hurry up? We're going to miss the bobbleheads." "Gladys, honey, that's all you talked about the whole way up here. I get it already." Gladys began waving her hand at her friend as though by the sheer force of her impatience, she could make Bernie move faster. "Come on, hurry up. We can't miss it. Hey, they put that new hip in you. I thought the titanium would make you fast." "You thought wrong," Bernie said, feeling a sharp stab as she tried to stand. Bernie shuffled along the center aisle to the sliding door of the Caltrain car. Her hip really ached. It had only been a month and a half since the surgery to replace the deteriorating bones with a high-tech socket. It still hurt, a constant aching pain, but she was determined to get back to the ballpark, back to see her boys play some baseball. It was all she thought about as she lay in the hospital bed. She counted the games she was missing and watched them on television, but it wasn't the same. "Come on, people are probably lined up already," Gladys said, still waving her arms. "Gladys, for God's sakes," Bernie said, clenching her teeth through pain. Gladys hopped impatiently from foot to foot, waiting on her newly feeble friend. Bernie had never been like this before, and it was annoying to Gladys. Bernie used to make her own kids look slow as she zoomed from place to place. Suddenly, overnight, she became an old lady, and Gladys didn't like it one bit. Gladys had one single intention, to get a Jason Schmidt bobblehead. She loved Schmidty. He was her favorite player. He was such a great pitcher, but he was also a nice guy. She'd met him at spring training 2 years ago, and he signed her baseball. He was so nice to an old lady, and it made her giggle like she was young again. Plus, she thought he was cute, and Gladys had swooned over him since, yelling out his name as loud as she could at games. Today, the ballpark was giving out free bobbleheads of that nice young pitcher to the first 10,000 through the gates, and Gladys was determined to be one of them. "Do you think I could get that Caltrain man to lower me in the lift?" Bernie asked, eyeing the deep steps down to the pavement below. She could just imagine herself slipping down those metal stairs and landing on concrete. "Bern, the lift is for wheelchairs. Plus, the doctor said that walking is good for you, so walk, dang it, and hurry up." Bernie struggled down the tall steps. Her eyes watered with the pain as the last step off the train was the worst. She wondered if she'd be able to get back on board when the game was over. Sometimes the hip stiffened up after sitting for a while. "Okay, I'm off the train. Let's get going," Bernie said, sliding her tote bag onto her shoulder. Bernie and Gladys had been to a lot of baseball games together in the 50 years they had been friends. Gladys and her husband Howard had been season ticket holders since back at Candlestick. They had gone to almost all the games, even when the San Francisco Giants were in a losing skid. They were very loyal fans. Bernie had been to a few games with them back in those days, after their kids had grown and gone off to school, and Gladys and Howard still had four seats. When SBC Park was built, they called it Pac Bell back then, Gladys and Howard made the move over. In fact, the Giants organization fell all over the place to make sure they'd get charter seats at the new address. Unfortunately, Howard never saw a game in the new lush ballpark. He died soon after the astoundingly large check had been written to secure two seats. And being a charter seat holder, Gladys was locked into buying the seats for the next 7 years, so she took a variety of people with her to the games. Bernie was the most frequent guest in the sidecar seat. Baseball was a love both women shared. "Do you want to stop and get one of those pizzas on the way?" Bernie asked to the back of her best friend, who was still walking way too fast and a good 8 paces in front of her. "No, I can't eat that stuff anymore. It's too hard on my stomach. Plus, it has too much fat in it," Gladys said, patting her hips as she continued walking. "Yeah, well, eating fatty food is the only excitement I get anymore," Bernie said with a sigh. "Really? What about taking those big pain pills?" Gladys said. "Oh, yeah, that's pretty good too," Bernie said. The two women laughed together and kept walking. Gladys finally slowed her pace to match her friend. She didn't want her falling down. As the women continued to walk up King Street, the red brick beauty of a ballpark was now in view. Bernie always got a lift in her chest when she saw it. To her, it was the most beautiful place on earth, better than any cathedral ever built. Their footsteps fell together in easy rhythm, and they approached the intersection of 3rd and King. The magic feeling was building in Bernie, and she smiled. "What are you smiling at, old woman?" Gladys asked. "I'm just happy to be here, friend. A day at the ballpark sure beats anything else." The women crossed to the other side of 3rd and then turned, waiting for the light on King in front of the donut shop. As they stood on the curb, a crush of people surrounded them. "Gonna be a big crowd today," Bernie said. "Well, it's bobblehead day. Plus, we're playing the Dodgers. That always gets them out," Gladys said, looking annoyed at all the people. The women crossed the street and tried to brace themselves against the push of young people surrounding them. "Hey, watch out, you stupid jerk," Gladys yelled at the receding back of a young man who had bumped her and stepped on her foot in his haste to get across the street. "Glad," Bernie said in a warning voice. "Burn, he stepped on my foot. I'm an old lady. He could have crushed me."
"Woman, one day your mouth is going to get us both in trouble," Bernie said, rolling her eyes at her friend.
Gladys had a penchant for yelling obscenities. She'd always been like that. Her late husband Howard had bailed her out of more than one scuffle. In the early years of their marriage, Gladys had been calm, the perfect tableau of the housewife. But years spent with Howard had made her hard. She sat next to him at all those baseball games, and at several Niner games, too, and over time she learned the fine, and until then predominantly male, art of hollering her aggression. She was hell on the opposing team's players, and worse when her own team let her down. Her seats were 3rd row by the hitter's circle on the home side. When Gladys put her full lung capacity into it, the players heard her clearly. More than once an usher had come to talk to her, but Gladys was a charter seat holder and a 30-year season ticket holder, so there wasn't much they were going to do, and Gladys knew it. Still, it embarrassed Bernie. Lately, the loudmouth antics had begun to transcend the ballpark. Gladys yelled at other drivers on the road, people passing on the street who she judged to have done her wrong, cashiers in grocery stores, and the occasional lackadaisical waitress at her favorite restaurant. Bernie knew it was only a matter of time before one of those people overlooked the fact that she was an old lady, and trouble started. And now Glad didn't have Howard to step in with the muscle. And Bernie certainly wasn't going to defend her honor.
"Wow, look at that line. I can't believe everyone is here so early. The gates aren't even open," Bernie said, trying to take her mind off her aggravating friend.
Bernie preferred a quieter approach to life. Gladys surveyed the situation and said, "You want to try the 2nd Street gate? Or maybe the one on Sears Plaza? The main gate's going to be the worst." She was plotting their victory like a field general.
"The 2nd Street gate seemed to work best last time. Let's go there," Bernie said.
She didn't want to walk all the way around the park to get to the Seals gate. It was a long hike, and her hip was throbbing anew. She was already worried over how long they were going to have to stand in line, and was glad she packed the whole bottle of pain meds she had from her doctor. She'd been trying to wean off of them as late, but this was going to be a multiple-dose day. The two women found their way down the street to the other gate and were heartened to see a much shorter line. They quickly jumped in place in front of the rapidly approaching crowd and looked back to see the line forming quickly behind them.
"I think we're in good position," Gladys said, counting back the number of people from the front.
"Yeah, as long as those yo-yos don't crush in too bad from the sides. We should be okay," Bernie said, glad to be standing still.
"I hate that. Why don't they have more security? It's not fair those people cutting in when the rest of us have been standing in line. It just makes me mad," Gladys said, shooting dirty looks to anyone within range.
Bernie chose not to engage in this one. Gladys was right, but she wasn't about to say that to her. It just encouraged her. After what seemed like an eternity, the gray-shirted workers finally approached the gates and began to unlock them.
As they did, the crowd began surging forward. It gave Bernie more than a little moment of panic. She hated crushing crowds like this. It was one of the many reasons she had stopped going to concerts and other public shows long ago. Bernie wasn't a claustrophobic person, but when surrounded by people with no way out, she did in fact suffer similar symptoms. It helped just to keep her head down and follow whomever she was with. She reached out and grabbed the back of Gladys's jacket and cast her eyes downward. "That you pulling on me?" Gladys said over her shoulder. "Yeah," Bernie said. She knew Gladys was used to the drill. "Here," Gladys said, and brought her hand up over her shoulder to hand her friend a ticket. Bernie grabbed it quick. On bobblehead days, people liked to get extra tickets so they could harvest as many of the little plastic statues as possible. Most sold them on eBay. Everybody was an opportunist, and most of those folks wouldn't hesitate to grab a ticket out of the hand of a little old lady not paying attention. The two women shuffled their feet as the crowd propelled them onward. Soon they were at the gates, where people wearing windbreakers with the words "security" over the heart checked bags being brought inside. Both women opened their bags for the security folks to peek in, and soon enough they were at the turnstiles. There was no one standing in the brief few feet after security check, but before the turnstile, so Bernie stopped and took a deep breath as she broke away from the crush of people. To be expected, an usher shooed her along, and the person behind pressed her through. She put her ticket under the light to be scanned, and when the light turned green, she entered the turnstile. As she emerged from the other side, a tall white box was held out to her, and she smiled again. She thought of the frenzy Gladys had been in for one of these, and now she had one in her hot little hands. She felt a momentary lift of victory as she turned to find her friend. "All right, we got him," Gladys said as she walked up. Gladys always did love free things. "Want to take the elevator?" "More than you know," Bernie said. Now that the ultimate form of baseball treasure was in their hands, Gladys was willing to slow her pace. Her mood went from frenzy to worship. Attending a game was the nearest thing to heaven she'd ever found. No pulpit-thumping preacher had ever made her feel the way she had when she saw a perfectly executed double play or watched a soaring home run off the bat of one of her boys. Today was Saturday, a baseball day of worship. As the women stepped off the elevator, they were hit with the smells of the place. Hot dog, beer, nachos, hot chocolate, garlic. Lots and lots of garlic. "You want to put our stuff down or get food now?" Gladys asked. Bernie thought a moment. Her aching hip made the decision for her. "I'm not hungry just yet. Let's sit." The path to the seats was well-worn and familiar. They could both find their way even if they'd been blindfolded and spun around like they were playing a kid's game. As they trod the shallow steps to the seats, the sound of bat on ball rang out over and over. "Hey, we hardly ever get here on time to see our boys taking batting practice. This is great," Bernie said, suddenly a young girl again. Gladys made the turn into their row and felt a tradition of grief that was now customary. Nowadays, every game she went to was a testament to her husband, Howard. He was her first and only love, and he taught her to love the game. Even though her best friend would occupy the seat next to her, the waves of loneliness washed over her again. Eyes slightly moist as they were before every game, she turned to her friend and said, "Ready?" Bernie nodded. It was tradition. It had become more than a way to honor the dead husband of her friend. It had become lucky stuff. The two women turned and faced their seats, heads down as though in prayer. Gladys began the recitation. The words rarely changed. "Howard, we know you are with us today, and we are grateful you are here. We dedicate these seats and this game to you. It is your hard work that pays for us to sit here today and watch our team. We ask that you speak with the baseball gods there in heaven and plead our case for a win today. You know how important this game is. We are counting on you, my dear husband. I miss you, Howard, and I love you more today than I did yesterday. We're here, Howard, and we're yelling for you, too." Bernie kept her head down and stared at the water-spotted green seat in front of her. She thought it was eerie to invoke a dead man before each game, but it made her friend happy, so she went along. Gladys was silent for a few moments longer, and Bernie fought the urge to turn around. She loved seeing the players, and they were so relaxed during batting practice. She felt like she was missing it. But she held on and let her friend have her time. After what seemed like forever, Gladys raised her head, turned to her friend, and said, "Thank you." Her eyes were moist again, and Bernie leaned over and gave her friend a hug of support. "Still miss him?" she asked. "Every day," Gladys replied with a sniffle. Personally, Bernie was glad Howard wasn't really with him today. He was a rude, rough man who'd always made inappropriate comments and had through the years tried to grope Bernie on more than one occasion. She loved Gladys and only tolerated her brute of a husband. Bernie had learned to avoid getting cornered in the kitchen with him. The day Howard died, she felt more sorrow from her friend than loss of that worthless man. But it made Gladys feel better to invoke the memory of her dead husband, and who was Bernie to argue? She smiled at her friend, and then dispensed with her own memories of a Howie baby in favor of ogling some young lads in baseball pants. She turned and looked out to the lush green field and was overcome again at the joy of just being at the ballpark. She let the rest of the world fade away and sunk into the green plastic-molded seat. A smile crossed her face. She may have just turned the age of 73, but in her mind, she was 24, and any one of those fine young men swinging the bat and fielding the ball could be her next great love. Sometimes she thought that the fantasy was what kept her young. It was certainly what kept her coming to the ballpark. "You want a hot dog, Bern?" Gladys asked. Bernie looked up to see Gladys standing over her, head haloed by the high noon sun. She shaded her eyes so she could actually see her friend's face. "Nah, I don't want a snout and bunghole tube, thank you very much. Why do you always ask me?" Bernie said. "Because I love to hear what new and creative name you've made up. Last week it was a lips and ears dog. The week before it was an intestine steak. I really can't believe you don't like hot dogs. What kind of baseball fan are you?" Gladys said, hands on hips. "The kind of baseball fan who likes hamburgers. Are you going?" Bernie asked, not wanting to engage in this discussion for what must be the millionth time. Gladys nodded. Bernie rooted around in her tote bag, pulling out a small wallet. "I just want some soda, please, the clear kind. What do they call it now? Rocky Mountain River or something like that?" It was Gladys's turn to sigh. "Sierra Mist? Is that what you want?" Bernie nodded and handed her friend a 20, and was relieved to see her turn and head back up the steps. Sometimes she felt like Gladys just didn't get her, like they were from two different planets. Then again, they'd been spending time together for years being from two different planets. Guess it wasn't ever going to get any better, Bernie thought to herself. Bernie turned her eyes back to the field and shifted in her plastic stadium seat until the hip got to a place with the least amount of throbbing. She pulled her tote bag into her lap and took out her binoculars. As she held them to her eyes and adjusted the focus, she found her favorite player on the field. Ah, Pedro Feliz. Such a beautiful man. Such an amazing player. Such an amazing butt. I mean, really first class. Bernie thought that it couldn't get any better than him. Bernie had always favored the Latin man and found Pedro to be a perfect specimen. She had tried to get his autograph at spring training this year, but he seemed shy and wouldn't sign her baseball. She fully intended to right that wrong as soon as possible. Bernie kept her high-powered binoculars on the gluteus of the young man and wished she had those camera binoculars she'd read about. She laughed at herself then, worried briefly she was becoming a stalker, and then sought out the other young bums on other young men. They were all beautiful as far as she was concerned. She lowered the glasses to her lap and watched the big man with the number 25 on his back striding to the batting cage. Barry Bonds. She felt her breath catch in her chest. This was rare. It was hard to catch the big man actually in the cage. He was a walking, talking piece of history, and Bernie stared intently at him. "Oh my God, is that Barry?" came Gladys's voice from behind. "Yeah, quick, he's just getting in," Bernie said, waving at her friend to sit down. Gladys complied easily, sliding into the seat. She held Bernie's soda in her right hand and a hot dog in her left. "Here, hold this," she said, handing both to Bernie. Bernie took a sip from her icy cold drink, all the while keeping her eyes on the broad-shouldered man in the batting cage. Crack came the bat, but it was a dying quail to short center. Crack, a grounder foul. Crack, a squibbler to right. Then that sound, that magical sound, the perfection of solid wood on leather, as a small white ball went careening over the 24-foot wall and right, headed towards McCovey Cove. "Well, that's got to be a splasher," Bernie exclaimed. "Definitely," Gladys agreed, watching the white ball exit the yard. Crack, another one screaming towards the arcade on top of the right field wall. "I hope he does that all day," Bernie said in awe. "I just hope he gets something to hit," Gladys said. Bernie handed the hot dog back to her friend. "Here, take this disgusting thing," she said. "Yummy," Gladys said, digging in through the foil to find her treat. As Gladys munched, she and Bernie watched the rest of the Giants' lineup take batting practice. As they sat, settled in, ready for a game, they discussed the players and got caught up on each other's lives, since they hadn't seen each other in a couple weeks. The two women settled into a familiar, comfortable place, while the seats around them filled, and the afternoon sun shone brightly on the boys of summer.